from
Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Alan Young. We are back with Chalk Talk, a recurring segment on Insight. It's a series about our local schools and the policies and developments that affect our students. Once again, I am standing at the chalkboard with Shristi Prabha, Cap Radio's education reporter. Shristi's here live in the studio to school me today on student health. Shristi, welcome to Chalk Talk.
Thanks, Ellen. I am here to school you.
All right, well, let's get into it. I understand you've been focusing on a lot of issues related to girls and gender expansive youth.
You're right. It's a thrill when I get to center my stories on youth voices, especially gender expansive youth. Do you know what that term means?
I think I do, but I don't want to get it wrong. So why don't you tell me?
So it's an all-encompassing term, which includes non-binary students, trans students, and anyone who might identify with the feminine element of being that part, being part of your gender.
Cool. Thanks for the explanation. So what were some of the stories that you worked on?
One of the stories I worked on was Title IX, Education in Schools. I know the term sounds jargony, but I'm sure you've heard it before, right?
You know, I hear the word Title IX a lot, and I think it has something to do with girls in sports, right?
No, Title IX is actually a legal precedent set in 1972 that prohibits gender-based discrimination in educational programs receiving federal funding. So after 50 years of Title IX, students are continuing to fight the same battles, a lot of times around sexual harassment. The hashtag Sign for Nine campaign was started statewide by a Dublin-based student named Megha Ramanathan, who started a nonprofit called Girls for Sports.
Roughly when I was about 13 years old, more and more girls were dropping out of sports because of receiving sexist comments that emphasized girls should prioritize their academics over sports. And just the idea of being simply a female and being inferior in sports because you're a female. Many people didn't even know what their Title IX rights were. They didn't know that if there's a boys' sports team, there should be a girls' sports team as well.
So Sacramento-based Representation Project, which was founded by First Partner of California, Jennifer Newsom, has partnered with Megha. And with more education on Title IX, students should be able to ask for equity in sports access and other things at their school.
It sounds like an exciting development. Switching gears, I understand Sacramento County is getting new money for helping girls of color who are at risk of interacting with the criminal justice system. What can you tell me about that?
You're absolutely right. So four counties, Sacramento, LA, Imperial, and San Diego, are getting $1 million each to support intervention and prevention services for girls and gender expansive youth in the criminal justice system. They've partnered with Vera Institute of Justice, Sierra Health Foundation, and the state's Office of Youth and Community Restoration. I learned that in Sacramento, over 70% of young people who are detained are Black and brown girls, and 50% of admissions to girls' detention facilities are for Black girls. And that's a disproportionately high number considering Black girls only make up 8% of the state's youth population.
That is a giant disparity. So What are they going to do with the money?
They're trying to find local organizations working on creative ways to help intervene and prevent girls from being incarcerated. They're currently seeking local organizations in the four counties to give this money to. So if you're one of them, definitely reach out to the Sierra Health Foundation in Sacramento.
So has this been tried before? Is there like a model that we're following?
Yes, they've done this in Santa Clara County. Arabella Guevara benefited from this program. She was only 15 when she was first arrested and then became part of the juvenile justice system by the age of 16.
Well, the biggest reason I think it stood out is because it's led by system impacted folks. A lot of other programs I was a part of, they'll talk to you, say, hey, I get it, I understand, but you know, they don't actually understand. They never like really experienced the things that you went through. The biggest part, like I said, was that court advocacy. She taught me how to advocate for myself. You know, in court, as a 15, 16-year-old, you don't know what to say. You don't know how to get your voice heard. We always say our youth know what they need and they know what they want. But the biggest thing is being able to be heard. Adults never want to listen to kids. It helped me get charges dropped. It helped me get a lighter sentence. It helped just show, like, my growth instead of me just sitting there, like, quiet in court or just angry and not knowing how to express myself.
So she worked with advocates at Young Women's Freedom Center who intervened and provided Arabella with consistent support. And now Arabella works for the center, which she says changed her life.
An organization like this changed my life, honestly. All my friends are either incarcerated still in prison or literally dead. And without this program, I would have been just another one of those numbers. And I know it's been the same for a lot of other folks. Like a lot of folks that I was incarcerated with, I actually worked with here, or are there still participants here? So it's super important just to give back to the organizations that are able to provide this work.
Well, that's a really heavy topic. I'm happy for that young woman, and I hope that we find more in Sacramento County.
Yes, we're getting funding, so this is a positive thing.
So last time we were on, we talked about state education bills before Governor Newsom. One of them would expand sex ed class to include lessons about menstruation. Whatever happened with that?
It was signed.
Oh.
So every student in California will learn about premenstrual disorders, menstrual health, and menstrual irregularities, among other things as well.
Can you remind us about the importance of that bill?
Menstrual health education did not exist prior to this bill that mandated schools to actually teach it. So this is the first time.
I noticed that some of the supportive groups of the bill had names like Period, another group named Period, the Menstrual Movement, and Students Against Period Poverty Cupertino. That last one's a bit of a tongue twister. But is this one of those cases where the advocates are using a word that may have brought some shame in the past as now like a term of empowerment?
Yeah. If you read my reporting, student advocates talk about destigmatizing words like period, blood, and the...
Shristi, are you... I'm sorry to interrupt, but are you on your cell phone right now?
But yes, but just to check words that are associated with menstruation.
I'm so impressed with people like you who I guess can multitask, but I understand that many people think they can, even when they can't, especially kids. We've talked about how cell phones are a big problem in the schools. What was that other cell phone bill we talked about? What happened with it?
So yes, there was a bill on Governor Newsom's desk to limit and prohibit the use of cell phones on school campuses, which was also signed. So starting 2026, you can't be on your phone, or maybe less on your phone in your classroom.
Sounds like when the kids are learning about menstruation, they won't be on their phones.
Yes, students will have to wait after school to post TikToks about their awkward experiences in sex ed class.
Hey, speaking of state politics, I noticed another school facility bond on the state ballot, and I feel like I'm always voting for statewide school facilities bonds. What's up with that?
Well, over the past 30 years, there have only been 8 state education bonds, of which 2 have failed. The state's last school facility bonds, a $15 billion proposal in 2020, actually failed. It's been 8 years since the last statewide education bond passed. But you might be getting confused with the local bonds.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about local school bonds. So why do schools hit us up for school construction money on the local ballot and the state ballot? Like, can't they pick a lane?
I can understand your confusion. But if passed, Proposition 2 can match local bond dollars, doubling their capacity to modernize and rebuild facilities. So 50% of project costs for new construction can be matched, and 60% of modernization projects could be matched. So it's kind of like when you hear Cap Radio asking for match donations, and I know we ask a lot.
I understand, but unlike public source donations, this is going to pile on bond debt on the state with interest. Is anyone opposed to this?
So there are opponents, like the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association, which say the state should not take on any more debt for schools. We are currently at an annual debt cost of $2.7 billion for public schools in the state. The way state bonds work, actually, is that it doesn't actually increase your taxes, but you retroactively, the state will pay the general from the general fund or the general education fund the debt that they've taken on. So it's very different than what people might imagine. I know that naysayers are feeling like it's a matter of prioritization, using more of the general fund dollars for facilities costs, but 40% of the state's general fund is already dedicated to education, and we just don't have any more money.
Hey, Shristi.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like James Bond movies?
I guess.
Okay, how about the names Bond, State Bond? Tell me about this new state bond, Prop 2, right?
Right. Proposition 2 is an ask for $10 billion, which would give $8.5 billion to K-12 schools and $1.5 billion to community colleges for renovating, repairing, and building costs.
That sounds important. What's the need?
Well, think about schools like Elder Creek Elementary right here in Sacramento, where they rate highly on the equity index with the majority Black and brown population, and 90% of the kids are on free and reduced lunch. But they have an asphalt playground, and 90% of their structures are portable, temporary structures. Were you ever in a portable, Alan?
I was totally in portables in elementary school, middle school, and high school. And I also was an education reporter, and I remember in the school facilities world, they used to have this adage, there's nothing more permanent than a portable.
I know, right? And they end up being permanent even though they should be temporary. And that's not great because they can't be outfitted to be energy efficient. And then you add on that they're sitting on asphalt. Do you know how hot asphalt can get in California?
I know it gets hot, but I have no idea how hot it gets.
Up to 145 degrees Fahrenheit.
145 degrees? You could fry an egg on that.
Yeah, and you don't want kids having their skin sizzle. So an already outdated study estimated that there's over $100 billion in K-12 new construction needs in California. Al Muratsuchi, the one who put this Proposition 2 on the ballot, talks about how many schools are not equipped to handle the effects of rising temperature and extreme weather, and that Proposition 2 actually incentivizes thinking about climate-resilient infrastructure.
So let's talk about the local bonds, because as you explained, they kind of go together, local and state. So how many local bonds does our Sacramento region have on the ballot this year?
So there are 8 total education bonds, but 7 out of 13 school districts in the county are asking for money. So this is an unprecedented year because 250 school districts statewide are seeking local bond funding. Sacramento Unified's Measure D, for example, seeks $543 million in bonds. But let me explain how local bonds are a little different than state bonds. Local bonds will increase your taxes, and it will be for the jurisdiction within which your district is. So your property value will determine how much money you will be paying per $100,000. And so it is important to think about that when you're voting on your local bonds.
So if property owners are like noticing paying for these things, unlike at the state where it's like bond debt, $543 million sounds like a lot for just one school district. I mean, I'm thinking about how many houses you could build with $543 million.
Well, that's because school facilities cost a lot of money. A new school is costing around $70 million, and a campus renewal can be around $20 to $30 million. So having money to do this with matching funds from Prop 2 is super, super important.
So how do local bonds work, and why is there all this need right now?
So these measures focus on aging facilities, leaky roofs, outdated electrical systems, but it's also about creating safer and cleaner environments for students. Think about fire season or even heat waves, your HVAC systems, which are your AC and filtration and heating and cooling and all of that. You need that to be working to provide safe spaces for students to learn.
Keeping up with our James Bond theme, we might say, tomorrow never dies. And neither should our HVAC system.
I get it. Do you think our Gen Zers would even know who James Bond is?
I mean, I hope so. Do you? Wait, are you a millennial?
No, I'm 33. I'm solidly a millennial. Oh, yes, I am a millennial, not a Gen Zer. You're right.
Anyway, what other areas are the local schools making a priority with their local bond measures?
Health and safety are top of the list. And then they're using an equity index to check for areas that are more underrepresented. So areas that are more low income, have more English language learners, have more foster youth, and improving those schools first.
Well, Shristi, I am shaken, not stirred, by the need for new school facilities.
Alan, I do not know who you're trying to bond with, but I am not on your level of James Bond dad jokes.
Wait, you don't consider this a bonding activity? Chalk talk?
maybe okay, not.
Okay, so who do you bond with when you report on school facility projects?
I bond with the California Legislative Analyst's Office, school facility superintendents, local advocates, environmental justice advocates, legislators, dissenters. Those are the people I bond with, not you, Alan.
Well, Shristi, whoa, sick burn. But I feel like every Chalk Talk, our bond grows tighter. It's always so great to have you on.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
Coming up, what happens when California's campaign watchdog moves at a glacial pace? We'll hear about a new investigation into the agency. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio, where facts matter and stories inspire. I'm Alan Young.